This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to our third and final hour live right here on National Championship Monday on the early line across the Sports Grid Network. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Picks, previews, breakdowns for tonight's title game out in Phoenix between UConn, the one seed out of the East region, and Purdue, the one seed out of the Midwest region, for a national championship on the line. The second consecutive for UConn, the first ever in Purdue's program history. We will preview that game later on in this third and final hour. Major League Baseball picks coming your way up next. We'll have the prop perspective with Tom Vecchio into this final week of the NBA regular season as well. In the stunning news overnight in college basketball that has nothing to do with the national championship game, John Calipari leaving Lexington as the head coach of Kentucky, headed to Fayetteville as the new head coach of Arkansas.
Yeah, pretty wild that that news dropped late last night. And I don't think a lot of us saw this coming, because just, what, about a week previous, Kentucky's AD was saying, like, yeah, we're keeping the guy around. But it didn't say, like, we love him so much we don't want him to leave. It was basically saying, read between the lines. We let him go. It's like $30 million. Of course he is coming back. So maybe they got their wish and didn't have to actually pay for it as he moves on to Arkansas. But I think you saw the writing on the wall. When those two guys, let's just say the AD and also Calipari, met, it wasn't all hugs and kisses there, because why? They both knew the animosity between the two, and the only reason why he was staying was because they couldn't afford to buy him out. So anybody that's not wanted at a certain institution is probably going to move on and find their way somewhere else, Ben.
Let's welcome in that Sports Grid Radio audience here, our third and final hour on this Monday on the early line, Sirius XM Channel 159, all of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the fold as well. He's Donnie, I am Ben, and John Calipari is now the head coach at Arkansas. And you hit it on the nose there, DRS. Mitch Barnhart, the AD in Lexington for Kentucky Athletics. There was the rumored conversation that would happen after Kentucky was bounced by Oakland in the round of 64, now less than 3 weeks ago. Apparently, it was rather optimistic, enough that Calipari was going to return to Kentucky as its head coach. But some reports, obviously, since the job change has come out that Cal is making his way to Fayetteville, have reported that Calipari was not overly impressed and did not feel the wave of support that he wanted from Kentucky. But it was a $33 million buyout, reportedly, for what is the lifetime contract for Calipari had he wanted it in Lexington. But the beauty for UK, the beauty for Kentucky and Big Blue Nation, there's no buyout involved in a lifetime contract. Calipari does not need to pay Kentucky for leaving, but the benefit for Kentucky on their side of the equation is they don't have to pay Cal anything. So they save a lot of money in return and can then spend all of that money to go get one of the premier head coaches in college basketball. And John Calipari is a He is one of the winningest head coaches we have ever seen. He has won a national championship at Kentucky in 2012. He led them to four Final Fours in his 15 years in Lexington. But in the last five appearances for Kentucky in the NCAA tournament, they did not reach the Sweet 16. That is not okay in Lexington. That is not the standard of the all-time winningest program in college basketball. In the last 3 years, they have been bounced in the round of 32 by a double digit seed. Round of 64 by the 15 seed in St. Peter's. This year, round of 64 has a 3 seed against the 14 seed in Oakland. And when you look at what Calipari has done in Lexington, there has been success. He has had lottery pick after lottery pick. He has had number one recruiting classes six times in his 15 years, but Kentucky doesn't care if the guy goes first overall in the NBA draft. Kentucky fans at Big Blue Nation want to win national championships, at least reach the second weekend and see the Final Four. That is the standard. So I'm here to kind of say he's in a pretty good spot, because I don't think Calipari's model, at least the way it was going at Kentucky, really works in this day and age in college basketball. He'll have all the NIL money he needs to reinvent that, of course, in Fayetteville. But it's stunning for Kentucky. I don't think it's devastating for the Cats.
Yeah, it looks like now the new day and age is, yeah, you're going to get a couple high, you know, five-star recruits, but also you're going to supplement them with getting the transfer portal in. Guys that were maybe unheralded play 2 to 3 years, you bring them in, now they're certainly fine-tuned and drafted as opposed to coming out of high school. But take a look at Coach Cal. One thing you always had with Big Blue Nation out there was the excitement of the season to start, because you had, you know, 3, 4, 5 NBA guys on your team. But the question is always, how much are they going to gel over that 6 months that they're on campus, and how much will they care? And apparently that style hasn't worked out, because theoretically, when the one and dones came back here to the, you know, college basketball scene, Cal was supposed to dominate that. Hey, I'm going to get 5 out of the top 10 players every single year, and probably every third year we're going to make a trip at least to the Final Four, if not win the whole thing, just because, not my coaching, how talented we actually are. And it hasn't worked out in their favor. The interesting part's going to be for Kentucky is, how do you improve on Coach Cal? Because the one thing he did bring was a big presence, a lot of excitement. Rupp Arena was rocking with the anticipation of a season on the edge, or these teams were going to gel by the time we got to the, let's just say, March Madness and or SEC tournament. I'm interested to see which they go. Yeah. Is it a high-profile name, or is it one of those younger guys that's hungry with a clear vision that can bring Kentucky back?
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? But I think they're going to get that high-profile name. I think they're going to spend out the wazoo, like Arkansas is spending out the wazoo, $8 million to get John Calipari to Fayetteville. John Tyson, heir of the billion-dollar food conglomerate Tyson Foods, is one of the main reasons, because of his close relationship with Cal, that he has brought Calipari to Arkansas. Again, 15 years at Lexington. Arkansas is not the basketball program that Kentucky is. It's a lateral move within the SEC, but the history is not there for the Hogs like it is for the Cats. But that does not mean Arkansas is a bad basketball program. Bud Walton is one of the best college basketball environments that you will see. Arkansas has made the big splash. I expect Kentucky to do the same. Might it be Dan Hurley? I don't think he's leaving Connecticut at this point. Could it be Nate Oates from Alabama? Scott Drew at Baylor? Billy Donovan back from the NBA, where he was the last head coach potentially prior to tonight to win back-to-back national championships. I think Kentucky is going to get a very big fish to be the next head coach.
And also, agents have to love this, because they'll throw their coach's name in the hat, even if he wasn't even looking at the Kentucky job, to get an extra couple years here. So good things there, like the Shaka Smarts of Marquette. You know, he's just, well, you know what? I'm going to turn down that Kentucky job. Why? Because Marquette's forced to give up another 2 to 3 years here at a premium price. This is the way the whole thing works. Strike while the iron is hot, and we'll see who Kentucky actually gets here. A lot of intriguing choices to go along with that, but also major expectations. That's an NBA franchise in Lexington. You better hold up your end of the bargain, or you'll be out quick there.
It'll be very interesting to see what Arkansas' ceiling is starting in 2024 and what this means for Kentucky. Again, I don't think Big Blue Nation is devastated. They're hoping for greener pastures. Major League Baseball Daily Dive with Dad next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Diamond Dash around Major League Baseball on this Monday, setting up a new week in the bigs. We're almost at the 2-week mark of this Major League Baseball season, following the second weekend that we have seen in MLB. Again, it's the divisional showdown, it's the in-state showdown, and the finale of the series today between the Rangers and the Astros. Houston on the road, Framber Valdez gets the start, minus 142 in favor of the Stros. The over-under is 9. DRS, as you line this one up, between these division rivals and the state foes, how do you see it playing out today in Arlington?
Yeah, maybe look to the under here. Double digits going to have to get that in order to cash in a total here. We take a look at Framber Valdez, who was very good last year. And again, 50 batters he's faced on this young season so far. ISO power number combined an 0.48, which is great. Weighted on base percentage 3.23, but certainly not doing anything too terrible. Now, he's a left-handed pitcher, and early on the season for the Texans Rangers, nobody on the team even has more than 10 at-bats against a left-handed pitcher. Having said that, guys like Corey Seager and Adolis Garcia coming in with a 0.0 ISO power number against lefties, so still waiting to see a couple of those guys starting to hit. Let's flip it over to Andrew Heaney, who last year was an okay pitcher in Major League Baseball with 710 batters he's faced. This year, 20 batters faced, which is roughly one start. But how about this? ISO power number through those 20 batters, a 0.0. Weighted on base percentage at a 2.14. Even though we love that Houston Astros lineup today, for me, division rivals going toe-to-toe, and I need double digits to win this one, I'll lean on the under here. Just based on the pitcher form this early in the season, two lefties on the mound usually can cause a little bit of havoc for those batting lineups early in the season.
The Rangers got off great start in this four-game set against their divisional foes. They scored 10 in the opening game of this series on Friday. They scored 7 on Saturday night. But yesterday, Houston made sure they would not be swept in this series. Now looking to get the split as the Astros won 3-1. When you look at Houston, though, DRS, entering this year as the favorites to win the American League pennant, the Astros and the A's have the same record right now in the American League West, both at 3-7. It's a very long season, 10 games out of 162, but Houston has moved back ever so slightly in the AL pennant odds, plus 390. The Yankees had the second best price, still the second best price, but it was nearly a dollar gap before the year got started. Now just 20 cents, the Yanks 8-2 to start this year.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying what the Yankees have been doing. Also, some of those, hey, look, we're going to get our ace back to start at least throwing pitches from a mound, so things might be looking up, and a great start for those Yankees. But let's take a look at the game today against the Marlins, who finally got their first victory of the season. You get about 60 degrees in the Bronx with the wind blowing out the center field, which sounds great. But let's take a look at the pitching matchups, and also recommending this. It's early in the season. These things will turn around. But as we just previewed the previous game, Ben, left-handed pitchers early in the season sometimes cause a little bit of issues here. Jesus Luzardo due on the mound. He struggled a little bit last year with right-handed batters, dominated left-handed batters. That's usually what you see from an above-average left-handed pitcher. On this early season here, his combined ISO power number is a 265, which isn't good. If you take out the lefties of the equation, which he's only 6 at bats, 32 batters that he's faced. How about this? A 300 ISO and a 321 weighted on base percentage. What does that tell you? If you're getting a hit, it's more likely to be a double or a triple or a home run than it is a single. So you're making contact. But let's flip it over to the Yankees lineup today, Ben, that we anticipate playing today in their starting nine and take a look at them again. Most of these batters, 7, 8, 9, 10 at bats against left-handed pitching, we don't have a big bat log of this, but let's take a look at those ISO power numbers, which are so important. Gleyber Torres against lefties this year, 0 ISO. Juan Soto, 0 ISO. Aaron Judge, 0 ISO. Giancarlo Stanton, a 0 ISO power number. Anthony Rizzo, 0-0, birdie 0, Trevino 0. You get the point on this? We're not ready for left-handed pitching yet, particularly from a Yankees perspective. Flip it over quickly here to the Marlins side, going up against Nestor Cortez, a lefty who struggled a little bit this year early in innings. First four guys in that lineup today were going up against a left-handed pitching with ISO power numbers, Ben. 056, 071, 0.067. Not a lot of offense expected here. It's a shame because it looks like we finally got a decent baseball day hitting weather-wise. I just don't know if I can trust it at this point here.
Marlins have gone over in 8 of their 10 games this year. Of course, yesterday they etched out their first win of the season to avoid an 0-10 start, but still 1-9. They did get a victory over St. Louis. And you would hope that, okay, sluggish start, probably booked as the underdog, certainly on the run line a few times in these opening 10 games of the year. Maybe a couple of games by just a run. Nope. Miami is 1-9 on the run line as well. The Yankees three series this year, opening four-game sweep over the Houston Astros. They won the series against the D-backs on the road. They won their home opening series against the Blue Jays over the weekend. Bad news for Cleveland over the weekend as the Guardians had to put Shane Bieber on the shelf for the remainder of this year. The Cy Young winner in 2020, the ace of the staff. It's going to be a tough club for the Guardians. But with that said, the good good news, Cleveland's won four straight, only played two games this week against Minnesota, won both of those games against the Twins. Cleveland's off to a 7-2 start and booked as a greater than $2 favorite, minus 225 against the White Sox today. White Sox opposite end of the spectrum. Chicago just won an 8 to start.
Yeah, Chicago stinks. I mean, let's break that word right now. Yeah. Good baseball, but also this early in the season, you take a look at 63 degree temperatures. Again, quite nice for this time. You're finally breaking the 40s and the 50s. A slight wind blowing in from left field today, so it doesn't make that big of a difference. But having said that, that's a high price to pay here for the Cleveland Guardians this early in the season. Tristan McKenzie, who is a solid pitcher, is a right-handed pitcher, only faced 17 batters this year, really struggling against lefties. So we're going to take a look at that lineup for the Chicago White Sox. Grossman, lefty. Yoan Moncada, lefty. Sheets, lefty. Benintendi, lefty. Fletcher, lefty. Schumach, I've never heard that guy's name. Braden Schumach. Maybe it's Maki, Mach. I don't know. We'll find out later. But he's a lefty. That's all that matters. And Nicky Lopez is a lefty. So what we're saying here is, looking at the left-handed batters going up against, you know, McKenzie, that's a decent look today. So without really having much of a backlog or a handicapping shot, I'm not laying 225 here. I'll take the dog price here. Let's go White Sox.
And listen, like I said, for the Marlins, who are 1-9, you would hope maybe a couple of those losses by at least just a run, and maybe they're 3-6 on the run line this year. No, but for the White Sox, who are 1-8, they're 5-4 on the run line. That's not terrible. Plus 1.5 is minus 115 of juice. If you think the Southsiders keep this within at least a run, if not win outright. Two strong starts this year, maybe rather surprisingly for two teams that haven't done a ton in the last 5, 6, 7 years in Major League Baseball. The Tigers and the Pirates. Detroit 6-3 to start this year. They've dropped a few in a row as well. The Pirates 8-2. Pittsburgh booked as a home favorite today with Mitch Keller on the bump, minus 124, total at 8.5. Who capitalizes on the strong start today at PNC?
Decent temperatures there in Pittsburgh, also been 66 degrees, light wind blowing out to left field, so good. We're starting to feel those vibes here of getting to some hitting weather. Reese Olsen was very good, a nice power number of 153 and a weighted on base percentage of 284 combined through 433 batters. That was fantastic. Now, 22 batters he's faced this year, Ben. ISO power number, 053. Weighted base percentage, 234, which is very good. Mitch Keller, the veteran right-handed pitcher, will be on the mound today for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Last year was decent. Struggled a little bit against left-handed batters, but this year against lefties, how about this? To start out the season, 15 he's faced, an 077 weighted on base percentage. So I hate to do this, but again, lining up towards, I'd be leaning on an under 8.5 in this game between these two pitchers, even though we're finally starting to see a little bit warmer temperatures. I don't know if it translates just yet. I'll go under this game today.
So now we go from the American League Central team in Detroit to the National League Central team in Pittsburgh, to looking at the NL Central overall. Everybody in the division, at least 500 or better, and that includes both the Cubs and the Reds. Chicago 6-3, Cincinnati 5-4. The Cubs, though, on the road today in San Diego. I messed up something there. Oh, it's the Brewers and the Reds. That's on me. That's bad hosting. Put that on me.
Same team.
Put that on me. That's on me, though. Central focus, though. Brewers also above 500. Who wins this game in San Diego?
Yeah, if you take a look at Graham Ashcraft on the road last year, quickly here, not a very good pitcher, so I fact that the Milwaukee Bats are slightly hot in this. I'll take the Milwaukee Brewers in this game today.
Total at 9 now, and even pick a minus 108 on both sides. Hey, you know, it's early in the Major League Baseball season. Come back to your next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's the final week of the NBA regular season before the postseason begins. It's week number 2, or at least getting to the second week of the Major League Baseball season. Officially into the second week on the calendar, but I mean by the time everybody has played 14 games. Tom Vecchio is the jack of all trades, regardless of what time it is on the sports calendar. And he joins us here on this Monday for his prop perspective. Vecchio, as always, appreciate the time. Thanks for being here on this Monday on the Early Line.
Thanks for having me. Yes, super loaded slate when it comes to the the MLB tonight. Very few NHL games, no NBA games. We actually have the NCAA final tonight. A lot going on. Like you said, very important time for the NBA. I think we're coming down to literally the last day of the season. will determine the standings. Super crazy time. I'm ready to go.
Jaden Smith over 5.5 rebounds. Donovan Klingon over 13.5 points. Mason Gillis, 2+ made threes. Does Vecchio have a prop for the national title game?
I don't. I can't bet because I'm in Connecticut. Can't bet on a Connecticut team. So I'm just on the sidelines with this one.
Gotta stay local.
What a terrible 2 year. Terrible for Vecchio.
Yeah, man. No action for me on any of their winning by blowing teams out every time.
Man, that's tough. All right, but Vecchio, let's focus on basketball. Final week of the NBA regular season. No games tonight as they bow to college basketball, at least on this Monday. But we've got a lot of seeds to figure out in the Eastern Conference. We've got to figure out the Western Conference, 5 through 10, play-in tournament teams, and who might be one of the six just to get into the regular playoffs. As you look at the NBA title odds here in the final week of the regular season, what are they telling you about the playoffs on the horizon?
It's telling me that we're on seemingly a collision course between Boston and Denver. And, you know, those numbers right now don't present a lot of value. So I think the best way to approach it is probably going to a direct outcome. You can bet on Boston to beat Denver at +550. You can bet on Denver to beat Boston at +700. You know, betting on a team at, you know, 2.5 to 1 or even less than that is not a spot that I would ever be going for, you know, something before the playoffs even start. So going to a direct outcome is probably the best. It's probably what's going to happen. I don't want to see that happen. I want to see some, you know, some major upsets, but you want to get a little action on the game at +550. I think that's probably the best way to go about it.
Yeah, pretty crazy here, the wind up and the finish here, which is great for NBA, and it's also like that slingshot effect. Some teams getting healthy and also winning at the end of the season may be able to do. Talking about doing damage in the regular season, a lot of us in Major League Baseball figured the Dodgers would be doing a ton of damage. And quite frankly, they're doing some damage here early in the 2024 season. But the thing that I know handicappers would love in this one, or should I say gamblers, a -146 price at the FanDuel Sportsbook as a favorite towards the Dodgers as the opening line, it's down to 136. Is that a don't take the Dodgers, or come on now? At -136, where do I sign up between Paxton and Ober?
It's certainly an interesting movement. You know, they got delayed yesterday with the rain, so, you know, maybe some late money getting on to the Twins. I don't have a ton of interest in this game overall. The only spot that I'll be looking is constantly looking at RBI props. And Donnie, you know this, anytime you get an RBI prop at solid plus money, that's where we're going. It's Freddie Freeman at +150 for an RBI, like 4 games with an RBI in that lineup. I'm just banking on the variance. You know, 4.59 implied team total. Bailey Ober at a 453 extra. And a 45% fly ball rate to lefties. Obviously, Freddie Freeman is elite, top of the lineup. I'll simply take +150 for Freddie Freeman anytime I can get it.
Now, the Dodgers did drop 2 of 3 on the road in the friendly confines against the Cubs in Wrigley this weekend, looking to bounce back now in Minneapolis. But Mookie Betts has been off to a torrid start. 386 is the batting average. That's 9th best in Major League Baseball. He has the most home runs. The Dodgers have played the most games, though, at 12. 5 homers this year. 4 bets. There are 3 players currently, Vecchio, with a 1 WAR, so a WAR, 1 WAR or better. It's Anthony Volpe for the Yankees, it's Witt Jr. for the Royals, and Mookie Betts has the best at 1.5. And we've seen that favored flip in the NL MVP odds, where entry was the reigning MVP, Ronald Acuña Jr. Now it is Mookie Betts. What do you make of the early season movement in the National League MVP odds?
Really where it should be. Obviously, Mookie Betts is off to a phenomenal start. My fantasy team thanks him for that. When it comes to those right there, the only player I would be willing to take a bit of a longer shot on is Pete Alonso at 3,000. You know, I talked about Alonso before to lead the league when it comes to homers. I don't have interest in that number, but if I think he has the skill to do that, the MVP odds should have him at one of the top if he's able to get to leading the league in home runs. So I want to kind of correlate those markets. His lead the league home run odds right now are 12-1. If those drop to about 15-1, that's where I'm going to be looking to jump in. He has the skill to do it. That lineup not looking so good right now, though.
Cubs going out west tonight to take on the Padres. It's going to be Assad versus Darvish. You take a look at that opening number at night here, overnight. It should say -138 as a favorite. The FanDuel Sportsbook towards the Padres. That line now sits at 134, so coming down slightly, and a total of 7.5 to early to a 6-3 start. Can the good vibes continue out there on the West Coast for you, Petco?
I think they have a good West Coast trip. I don't know if it starts tonight. You know, I was on some Yu Darvish unders. I talked about it with Kevin on Game Time Decisions over the past few weeks about Yu Darvish unders. I think this might be the time to take a Yu Darvish over 5.5. It is sitting at minus 140, minus 145. Good matchup for him. The Cubs, you said, they're off to a good start, but Darvish had that extra start in South Korea when they were there playing the Dodgers. So his pitch count is fully built up, and he should be ready to go well into the 90s. So find an over in 5.5 for Darvish tonight.
So the Chicago Cubs over in 6 of 9 games. They dropped their first two games of the year. Now the Cubbies have won 6 of their last 7, playing with some momentum, but the road underdog tonight in San Diego. Two surprising starts, Vecchio, for the Tigers and the Pirates. The Buccos off to an 8-2 start. The Tigers 6-3. They face off today in Pittsburgh. Who keeps the strong start going?
I wouldn't mind taking the Tigers in this one. I think they have a good mix of everything. I think Mitch Keller hit his ceiling last year. I'm not sure if this is going to be the best season for him, but I still have interest when it comes to the Pirates' bats. On the other side is a young, really unproven pitcher for the Tigers. Last year, he was slugging to lefties, 1.21 home runs per nine, a 41% fly ball rate, and a 37% hard contact rate. So let's go to O'Neill Cruz for 2+ total bases. We have 22 because he only played last year with the injury. WRC plus 240 ISO and a 39% hard contact rate versus righties is a spot that I'll be taking every time I can get it.
How about this spot? First place versus last place here as we take a look at the AL West, and that's Houston in last place with the Oakland Athletics. First place here as we sit. A total in this game that sits overnight at 9.5, which now dropped to 9, and a total that, you know, look, double digit's going to get it done today. I think it stays under. But if we're looking at the side itself, a minus 130 favorite for Houston overnight, now a minus 142 favorite here. It's Valdez versus Heaney, battle of the lefties today. What are we saying about Houston as the favorite here on the road?
I think that's certainly fine. I think it comes down to the line for the Astros just being better. Heaney can certainly get the strikeouts going, but he struggles a lot versus righties, like big time. So I have a lot of interest in Jose Altuve for 2+ total bases. I will also say Jose Altuve for 2+ hits is at plus 210. Obviously, he can get to 2+ total bases and only having one hit or double home run might be. But 2+ total hits, right. I will say, I'm not a big believer in BVP, batter versus pitcher. Altuve has really good success against Heaney, but that's just because Heaney's not great versus righties. Last year, 1.64 home runs per nine and a 448 slugging last. So Altuve, who doesn't strike out a ton and has a 136 WRC plus versus lefties last year, I'll take Altuve for both 2+ total bases and 2+ hits tonight.
The Yankees about to start their fourth series of the year. They have been victorious all three prior sets. Sweep of the Astros to start the year, win over the D-backs, series win over the Toronto Blue Jays in the home open. Weekend series of the year for the Yankees in the Bronx. That's where they remain. Good weather in the Northeast to start off this week. And the Miami Marlins, Tom Vecchio, winless no more. Finally, win number one in their first 10 games. The Fish, though, still 1-9. Can they maybe squeak out win number two tonight in the Bronx?
I don't know if it's going to be tonight, but I definitely don't see the Yankees sweeping this series. Just a bit of an inconsistency overall from their offense. I know they're going long games, but you know, they're starting off some games slow. I think Lizardo for the Marlins, I think he racks up the strikeouts tonight. Sitting at minus 146, it's a little bit of juice, but Yankees off to a slow start versus lefties this year. 25.8% strike rate, it's absolutely a small sample size, but Lizardo's a good pitcher. 28 and 30% strike rate over the past two seasons. He's right at that mark this year. He should be out there for a whole set of innings. The walks can be a slight issue, but so if you can keep the pitch count under control, I'm not going to be surprised to see 6 or 7 strikeouts from him tonight.
Much like the NBA, the NHL also coming down the backstretch. Two games tonight, 1 at 7:00, 1 at 10:00. It's Pittsburgh and Toronto. The Vegas Golden Knights taking on Vancouver. It's slight favorite here for VGK. Actually, it looks, this moves over to Vancouver at a minus 120 price. Now, a heavy favorite for Toronto at 166. What's some looks tonight on the ice for you, Tom?
That would be the under for the Penguins. Believes high priority game for the Penguins. They've kind of turned up as of late, picking up a lot of points. I would go to the under in that game. I also look to Crosby over 2.5 shots. It's sitting at like minus 150, minus 140, where we can find it. Always have the best lines available. But if Crosby ends with 2 or 1 shots tonight, something went wrong for the Penguins in a not a must win game, but it's approaching. He has 26 in his last 10. I would also look to Vegas on the money line. Tomas Hertl, their big addition at the trade deadline from the San Jose Sharks, is activated off of IR, and he's going to be playing tonight, like Vegas tonight as well.
It's a very competitive playoff race in the Metropolitan Division in the Eastern Conference, the Pens, one of three teams right now with 83 points. Those the Stanley Cup odds, regular season of the National Hockey League scheduled to come to a close a week from Thursday. Tom Vecchio, we appreciate the time as always. Let's show it one final time. Tom's top props for this Monday night, and if he gets over to New York, maybe Mason Gillis, 2+3-pointers for Purdue in the national championship game as well. Vecchio, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for the prop perspective.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Now it's time for your full preview of National Title Monday between UConn and Purdue. Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
National Championship Monday live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid in our final full segment of our 3 hours. It is your full breakdown and preview of tonight's title game out in Phoenix, Arizona. 1-1. Connecticut looking for its second consecutive national championship, looking to go back-to-back for the first time since Florida did so in 06 and 07. Purdue into its second ever national championship game in program history, looking for title number one for a proud basketball program in West Lafayette and looking to undo the demons in the full and foremost way. After last year getting upset by a 16 seed as a 1 seed in the NCAA tournament. It all comes down to tonight out in the desert. Connecticut enters as a 6.5-point favorite. Moneyline continues to work in favor of the Huskies, now -300. And the total has dropped by a point. It is 144.5. DRS, let's start with the numbers. Is the spread too large in favor of UConn, or does it feel fair for the team that is as dominant as we have seen in virtually the last two decades in men's college basketball?
It does feel fair, but let's also take a look at Purdue. Like, as great as UConn has been this season, Purdue has been almost equally as dominant record-wise. So let's just take a look at the number that's here. We're not playing the Gamble Pavilion. We're not playing at Purdue. It's a true neutral court site where both of these teams got wins at the Final Four in this building by double digits. One a little bit more in tempo than the other one. But again, if you know you're going to win the basketball game, there's no reason pushing the tempo for Purdue. They got the job done, played great defense all the way through. So let's just start at that 6.5 number, Ben. First loss of the season in overtime for Purdue, 92-88. That's a 4-point loss. Nebraska game, maybe an outlier, got smoked 88-72. Lost to Ohio State on the road, 73-69. Well within that 6.5-point number. And then you take a look at the Big Ten tournament where they should have ended up beating Wisconsin. They didn't. That game went to overtime. What was the final score there, Ben? 76-75. So you're at one game, which was an away game against Nebraska in early January, as the outlier. And if they're going to lose, they lose by more than, let's just say, double digits at that point. So there is a precedent for Purdue. Like, yeah, they're a really good team. They've won all of their games in the NCAA tournament to wind up in the NCAA final. And look at those games they won by. Crushed Grambling State, crushed Utah State, double-digit win over Gonzaga. Most people said, hey, Gonzaga's the spot here where they're going to be able to knock off. Then you took a look at Tennessee, one of the best defensive teams, won that game by 6 points, and NC State by double digits. So as if coming in leaking oil for Purdue, and man, they're really lucky to be here. They're not. But it just goes to show you how tough we think UConn is. And my earlier point is, UConn doesn't care about the tempo. There is no bad matchup for Connecticut going up against any team in the country. They always have the better matchup. And quite frankly, going up against Zach Edey, they have a chance not to be an eliminator, or a neutralizer of Edey, but just to make it a little bit harder than what it typically has been. For me, it's UConn tonight. They're going to win and cover. It's nothing against Purdue. It's a great program this year. It's the best player in college basketball, but now you're facing the best team in college basketball. And if they win, I can't say this. Like, well, I like Purdue in this game. I don't think they can win, but they can cover. I don't want to do that, even though Purdue does tend to play close games, Ben. It's UConn for me at the 6.5.
So the Boilers have been an underdog only twice this year, against Arizona midway through December in a game that was technically played on a neutral floor, but in Indianapolis. 2-point underdog against the Cats. They won outright 92-84. And then on a Tuesday inside the State Farm Center in their second of March in Champaign against Illinois in a game that If Purdue won, they clinched the outright Big Ten regular season crown for a second straight year. And with those stakes, Purdue did exactly that, winning outright as a 2.5-point underdog against the Illini. Two times a dog, two outright victories. To Donnie's point, then, I believe this game is going to be close. I believe there will be potential opportunity for Purdue to stay within this number for 85 to 90% of the 40 minutes that we see tonight. However, with the foul game being around this margin, and when all is said and done, and the clocks hit zero tonight to end out a college basketball season, if Connecticut wins by seven or more, I will not be surprised. And thus, based on that, don't love the spread tonight. I'm starting to talk myself into the total, despite the fact that it is dropping slightly. Open at 147.5. 145 and a hook was the number even on this Monday morning. Now 144.5. Purdue played seven games against Sweet 16 teams throughout the regular season. Five of those seven went over. Six of the seven were over this number of 144 and a hook. But both the Boilermakers and Connecticut DRS have gone under in either four of the five games for Purdue or all five in the big dance for UConn. Yes, Connecticut is elite defense. And they have every matchup to contain what Purdue does great. Zach Edey, okay, there's Donovan Clingan. To shoot the three, UConn runs you off that three-point line as we saw against Alabama. So there's not the offensive edge necessarily for the Boilermakers. Of the imagination, I just think we can get at least into the mid-70s for both of these teams and push us to the total going over 144 and a hook tonight. What do you think about that total for tonight's title game?
I actually lean a little bit more towards the under than I do the over, and you are looking at a price point here between two teams that can really get after on offense. Purdue, the third most efficient team, Connecticut, number most efficient team on offense. So that means even if the tempo is slow, we're still getting up good looks, and that could be quite true because also both of these teams aren't big turning you over, but I look at it for the opposite direction.
Right.
Look at Connecticut on defense, top five, Purdue top 12. They're going to be there. And also, I don't think the tempo is going to be there and or the turnovers. That means we're not going to get quick, easy run out buckets on either side tonight. And when you take a look at getting to the free throw line, Purdue is very good at that, top 13 in the country. But then again, UConn doesn't foul that much. And also, you're not just going to have your guys fouling Edey consistently because you can't match up down low. Donovan Clingan's probably not going to foul out of this basketball game. If he doesn't, that means he's doing a pretty good job on Zach Edey and not fouling Edey, which means Edey won't be going to the free throw line a lot. Take a look at Purdue's defense here also. Big guy like Zach Edey might get himself into foul trouble. That's not the case. Top five in the country, Bennett, not fouling here. So if we're not going to get those easy looks and 20 free throws apiece from each one of these teams, it's going to be tough to score in limited hats sets that we get, because as I talked about, I don't think we're getting a lot of run out sets here, which means one pass, two pass breaks, because again, we're not getting those turnovers here. Both good defensive teams. I lean under in this game. I do think nerves might come in with a little bit to start this one here, but if I had to put a wager on Ben, I would go under. I know you're looking at over, but it's tough. I think the line is right here, and I do agree though with the line moving slightly lower, but 144, they can get there. I just think it doesn't get there. That's all.
Both games in the Final Four under new sight lines, NFL Stadium for a basketball game. Maybe that's an easy handicap, but that's how it came through. Purdue and NC State with a total of 113 points went nearly 35 points under the pregame total of 146.5. Again, the Boilermakers under in four of five games in the big dance, only the round of 32 against Utah State, pushed two and over. Connecticut, with how dominant they have been, they have controlled tempo, they have controlled pace, they have controlled game flow. All five games have stayed under. Connecticut has only allowed more than 60 points once. That was 72 to Alabama in the Final Four on Saturday. So I'm saying all of the things that would lead to an under again. I just do believe that these two offenses, with efficient they are, will find their way to at least 70 each, and then you come within striking distance in a competitive game late of having a couple of free throws and adding to the total. Now let's focus on the props and the matchups that will dictate the outcome of tonight's game. You could not ask for a better big man battle than what we will see between Zach Edey and Donovan Clingan. They both enter pretty much every game they play with a huge upper hand against the opposition's front court. But now they have each other to contend with. So as it relates to the props, DRS, how do both Edey and Clingan perform tonight?
Yeah, you see that graphic up there, 24.5. It's actually dropped to 23.5, and I agree with the drop in that number, too. Here's how I'm trying to approach this game. Typically, typically you want to go after the best player, Zach Edey. Ooh, if he has a big game, Purdue can win. I get that. But I think there's so much importance on Edey versus Klingon on both ends of the floor that it opens up the game, Ben, for the guard play as opposed to the big guys. Because once, look, we're looking at Zach Edey. Every single game he goes up, and even in this game, he's still bigger than Donovan Klingon is technically. Bigger in height, bigger in weight. Yeah. We'll see if it works out. But if he's working extra hard, I don't know if he gets to the 23.5 points. That doesn't mean he has a bad game. Let's just say he finishes with 19 and 13 going up against Klingon. That's still a very good performance. Yeah. But for me, I just don't see Edey dominating unless Donovan Klingon gets two early fouls in this game, and then it starts to turn into bench guys just trying to eat up minutes and fouls until Klingon gets back into the game. So from my vantage point tonight, if I'm looking at player props, I'm not going Klingon and I'm not going Edey, because I think the focus for both of those guys is to make sure that the big guys aren't dominating at either side of the court. And for Klingon, I like his offensive game. He gets easy dunks all the time, but he's going to use up so much energy and hopefully so, just saying, look, my job in this game is to score. I'll get cleanup baskets, but if I hold Edey to under 20 points, we're winning this basketball game.
Zach Edey has had at least 20 points and at least 12 rebounds in all five games for Purdue in the Big. I actually think there's a slight discount on Donovan Klingon at 13.5 or maybe 7.5 rebounds, because the thought is Zach Edey is on the other side, which is true. But Donovan Klingon is as good as you will find outside of Edey, and is still a central component of what Connecticut wants to do offensively. Klingon's going to probably be a lottery pick in the NBA draft. And I know that doesn't necessarily relate to production tonight at the collegiate level in their final college game for both of these bigs. But Donovan Klingon is very, very good. 22 points, 10 boards, 5 blocks against Illinois in the Elite Eight. He had 18 points by the time all is said and done on Saturday night against Alabama, despite a slow start, and had 4 blocks in that matchup as well. Now to the point guards and the supporting cast. Braden Smith, Tristan Newton, to do a ton for their respective sides. Braden Smith is your pure point guard. Tristan Newton does a little bit of everything as well. And so as we look at Braden Smith and Tristan Newton, and let's move it forward to the rest of the primetime points, because for Connecticut, the supporting staff is deep. Stephon Castle, who had 21 and was UConn's leading scorer in the Final Four. You have guys like Cam Spencer that can light it up from deep, and Alex Caravan. On the other side for the Boilermakers, Lance Jones was the second leading scorer against NC State. He hit 4 triples. Mason Gillis buried 2 threes. Fletcher Lawyer had 3 threes. If there's not a guy named Edey and or Klingon on your prop sheet tonight, DRS, who are you focusing on?
Yeah, it's, and usually you look at Purdue, and rightfully so, because of the way they shoot the 3-point shot, they're unbelievably effective. So you're looking at basically as a team, 40%+ from 3-point range. That's where you would take it into effect. And again, I'm having a little bit of a tough time saying, okay, if we just buy into that, because typically with Purdue, they're not one of those teams like Alabama. We're top 20 in the country at volume from the 3-point line. That's not the case. They run their offense with Zach Edey, and rightfully so. When Edey's double or triple team, he kicks to the right guy. They're available to make wide open 3-point shots. So from a 3-point shot distance, I don't know if I'm looking at, so like, even like Mason Gillis, 4.5 points. What does that mean, Ben? That means he makes 2 3-point shots in this game, right? To get over that prop. That's one that I'm willing to look at as well, even though it is a 3-point shot. And I just told you, I'm not necessarily looking for those daggers here. But it's different from, let's bet guys at 13.5 points, 14.5 points, right? Mason Gillis knocks down an early 3-point shot. Like, good, he's probably going to shoot at least 2 more 3-point shots. Maybe he gets to the free throw line. Those are the type of guys I'm looking for discounts here. From an assist perspective, it's probably still going to be Smith. Because if he's not assisting, that means they're not getting wide open jumpers. And good luck going one-on-one against UConn, trying to get to the glass against Clean here. So for myself, from a Purdue perspective, give me Gillis over 4.5 points just to chip in, because it's a light price and you're always going to be in that game. And secondarily, I still need Braden Smith to be the assist guy in order to get those easy shots and looks. I think he's 6.5. He should be able to get the 7 assists tonight for me, Ben.
Mason Gillis, 2+, made 3 winners in 3 of the 5 games for Purdue in the Big Dance. He has made at least 2 and 9 of the last 11 for the Boilermakers. A best bet for tonight's national championship game. Coming your way next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
National Championship Monday live right here for just a few more moments on the early line. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Here is your rundown for the rest of the day. Of course, it's the regularly scheduled programming through most of the afternoon and into the evening hours. Game time decisions with Kevin Walsh, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern time. Then myself and James Young take over at 8 p.m. Eastern. Kev will get it quick. He'll come on to the set to help us preview the national championship game. 8 to 9:20. That don't laugh at the quick bite thing. I just mean he needs a refresh. He can't just come over from 8 and beyond. Put that smile away, Donnie. That's not nice. From 8 to 9:20 p.m. Eastern time in Sports Grid's Bracket Central National Championship Special, it's your pregame portion of the show. And then, starting as soon as the game begins, we react live, sweat out our bets, and present those live wagering opportunities for the final college basketball game of the year. And then on Tuesday morning, bright and early, Donnie Wrightside and myself live in studio in New Jersey to recap all the fun of this national Tuesday night. So before we say farewell, before we say goodbye, it is time for Bye Bye Bye. DRS, one final college basketball game this season. What is the best bet?
My future is so bright, Ben, that I need some shades right now. And I don't know how you see the eclipse at this point, because I can't see anything on right now. But as Joe Lisi would say, it's my eclipse crypto smash play of the year. And if I lose this, you get the rest of my Major League Baseball. No charge at all. It's UConn. It's minus 6.5. That's the way we're going, baby. That's the way we're doing it.
I love it. I want to know when you decided the eclipse glasses would be used for the best bet, and you don't tell your co-host, but I still do love it. The eclipse, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern here in the Northeast. Second best matchup today between the moon and the sun, only behind Zach Edey and Donovan Klingon. My best bet, over 144.5 for the reasons I laid out. We'll recap everything for you live in studio together on a Tuesday morning on the early line. He's Donnie on bed. We'll talk tomorrow.